That's what the insurance company versus DS Avionics Limited LLC. Welker, good morning to you.
Good morning, thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please this honorable court to take this appeal from the District Court of Douglas County. I represent DS Avionics LLC, which is the owner of a Piper Comanche twin engine aircraft. And the aircraft was insured under an open perils hull and liability policy, which is the U.S. Specialty Insurance Company. We believe that this case presents a fairly straightforward question for interpretation of a policy conferring first-party property coverage to this aircraft. The policy covers direct physical loss of or damage to the aircraft caused by an accident.
Policy argument is premised on a factual premise of a conversion, correct?
That would be correct, yes.
And is there any dispute between the parties regarding the facts?
Well, you'll have to ask Mr. O'Connor that question.
We
do not believe that there is a dispute of facts, and we do not believe that the trial court disputes the fact that there was a conversion of this aircraft that was committed by Keith B. Edquist, which is the landlord of a leased hangar at the North Omaha Airport. So the answer would be, I don't believe there are any disputes.
I recall some statement, and perhaps another statement elsewhere in the briefing that disputed it, to the effect that the owner of the aircraft had the opportunity after the tenant was convicted to take possession of the aircraft and fly it. What's in the record?
What is in the record is in the record, of course, is deposition testimony. And some statements in briefed by the appellee that that was the case. However, the record was established that DS Avionics, for a significant period of time, had no communication with the aircraft that had seized and detained by the owner of the airport, Keith B. Edquist.
So there's some deposition testimony saying, yes, they could have pulled it off, and there are some statements or deposition testimony saying, oh, no, we didn't know anything about it.
My apologies, Justice Castle. I didn't answer that part of that question, which poses the premise that it was available to be flown off. We contend that it was never available to be flown off without the payment of a price, which was somewhat of a moving target, this would be elicited in the order of the trial court. Mr. Edquist claimed at various times in communications to the mechanic who had possession of the aircraft that he would not allow removal of the aircraft without the payment of a fee, which ranged from $1,700 to other costs at different times.
One is flown in for several thirds, is that correct?
That is correct.
Locks were changed on December 1st. There's some indication that on December 2nd, the plane was removed from the hangar and made available to the ticket from the airport.
Well,
part of that
is accurate. It was removed from the aircraft without from the enclosed hangar by the mechanic. DS Avionics had no rule or information regarding that. And it's unclear whether the mechanic was trying to rescue the aircraft or whether the landlord wanted the aircraft out of the hangar to be appropriated by self-help.
So December 2nd, without the tarmac, it came under summer. Your client's not aware of the planes available to be removed.
That's correct. And the record also establishes that there was an F-350 plow truck that was parked in front of that aircraft. Placed outside of the hangar. And the district court recites many of those facts in its orders, including the fact that the sheriff at some point told the representative of DS Avionics that, well, maybe you can get a tow truck to remove the plow truck from the front of the airplane, but that would probably cause a violent breach of the peace. And thankfully, my client declined to engage in that sort of thing. It then instead demanded return of the aircraft unsuccessfully, refused to pay what could be characterized as a ransom for the aircraft, because it has always contended that the owner of the airport, he had put actual or implied contract for storage of the aircraft, which was admitted in the facts of this case. The policy defines an accident as a sudden event during the policy period, and I don't expect it nor intend to provide any insurance. The appearance of Keith B. Edquist when appropriating this airplane was totally unacceptable.
Right, and I can't accept it. I'm having difficulty finding a sudden event.
Well, the sudden event would have been the taking and aversion of this aircraft.
When did that happen?
Well, that happened when the aircraft was removed from the enclosed hangar where they had delivered by DS Avionics, and then by Mr. Keith B. Edquist taking possession and demanding ransom for the aircraft.
Did that happen over a period of time then? I mean, that we've heard sort of the timeline on that. Can something that happened gradually over a period of a week and a half or 2 weeks
Well, I believe that it can be claimed that there was a series of communications thereafter that had to retreat unsuccessful, because my client declined to breach the peace or to otherwise pay the ransom.
What would you say is the best story for the proposition that a sudden event can be
the acts as whether it be in the dark of night or otherwise, the changing of the locks to the hangar now dispossesses the mechanic, who was the bailee with the aircraft that being entrusted, and then the continuing acts thereafter.
We would assume that something happened and the next thing something else
happened and so forth. And the question is, are, is that serious fact, a sudden event, insurance purchase? Well, I can't speculate on the story, other than many policies have described that have been notorious to them, like as occurrence or an accident. And these were beyond the...
Is there a place in the policy that
suddenly,
not momentarily, what?
It does not say that in this policy.
This policy covers theft, correct?
It is an open perils policy, and there are so it will cover any loss of the aircraft unless otherwise excluded.
Is there a point at which the theft occurs?
Well, I certainly believe so. That would have been when Keith Medquist took control of the aircraft. Well, when it was, that would be certainly one version of the facts, and certainly when it was taken out of the hangar, the enclosed hangar, because of that, and then a plow truck was placed in front of it, that confused me. So whether it was December 1 when the locks were changed, or December 2nd when the aircraft was taken out of the hangar and not allowed to leave the airport, multiple degrees.
What is the evidence or
any
disputed about the theft?
The evidence is pretty clear, and I don't think that's disputed, because we have 350 pile truck at the airport. There's place in front of us, and the district court discusses that in his findings.
Who placed the tow truck in front of the plane? Was it Edquist? Was it someone working on the maintenance department? And how do we come to interpret that?
This was a privately owned airport, like DP Edquist. And the plow truck was used for purposes of clearing. And whether the individual did so, you don't know if he did so, but it was an asset of privately owned airport.
My question is, do you know whether that was accidental or purposeful?
I don't know that it was a specific plane, it's just a way, but it did prevent the airplane from moving from the site.
Is it undisputed that the plane was still in contact with the plane running the craft after the craft was moving to the contract?
That is undisputed. Thank you. Maybe I'm not a time. I'm sorry.
Would it have been possible to see the facts show whether it would have been possible to maneuver the aircraft here for that part?
There's nothing in the record.
Nothing in the record to show us where this occurred, vis-a-vis the edge of the apron, for example, or what are the paves, what was beyond the pavement, that takes a photograph or something.
There is a photograph. There is a photograph in the record. Later on, it takes these plow truck and the aircraft, which is
tied to show what's behind the aircraft.
And there was also evidence tied on the head. And it would have been an aggressive area of aggression. It was impossible to move the craft under that circumstance without paying the ransom.
Does the record indicate who had the lock to the side lock? Who placed the lock on the first lock?
Record doesn't conclusively establish that justice had to be presumed. It was not DSA Bionics, and it was not Scant. I'm afraid I'm out of time. I would ask for a reversal of some judgment, finding by a matter of law that there was coverage for this loss, and to demand the case for determination that it was like the evidence.
Thank you very much. Mr. O'Connor, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. I am Robert E. O'Connor, Jr., and I represent U.S. Specialty Insurance Company in this matter. We are the plaintiff and appellee. Based on the questions that the court has raised, I would take a moment and address the facts. The facts, most simply, are found in Exhibits 2 and 3, which are the sworn statement and proof of loss by DS Avionics, and then the claim summary furnished to the insurance carrier by DS Avionics. Both of those claim that there was a loss by theft, and go on to say a theft loss occurred. The cause and origin of such a loss was the unlawful seizure, the strange conversion, and theft of the aircraft, holding the aircraft ransom for to extract payment and compensation to the thief or thieves involved. Your Honors, simply put, you don't create a claim with artful language. You don't create a claim by calling things one thing or another. What you do is you present facts to an insurance company, and an insurance company then makes a determination as to whether or not there's coverage under the terms of a very specific insurance policy. Well, because it gets, it might be excluded. We don't cover conversion. He goes on in the claim summary to claim that the plane was converted.
To whom was possession of this aircraft given?
Oh, very clearly was the trail vehicle.
And would that be personal business that is having to have some service of claim?
The claim was made by the DSA Avionics. Their claim.
Right, what did your investigation show with respect to you're the one relying on the
Our it shows a tooth edge was converted into the aircraft.
And that's not the end. That's not the end. The claim was given, correct?
That's correct.
So I'm having a hard time getting into the exclusion with these facts.
Well, you don't need to get into the exclusion to deny coverage. There's no theft. I mean, Your Honor, to my understanding, it's fairly simple. You can't take your asset, whether it's an airplane or a Schwinn bicycle, you can't take your asset and leave it somewhere for 11 days and then claim that someone took it from you. You just can't do that, particularly when 2 days after you drop it off, someone says, hey, come get it. And they say, that's inconvenient. The fact that it's inconvenient for DS Avionics to come pick up its airplane doesn't all of a sudden convert all of this into some type of an insured risk. That's the point. That's the point.
When did DS Avionics get notice that someone had taken the airplane?
Very clearly, on December the 1st, when Trejo Daniel came and found that the hangar was locked.
Well, that's the point. That's not DS Avionics. When did DS Avionics find out that somebody had control of their aircraft other than Mr. Daniel?
As I'm standing here this morning, Your Honor, I'm not sure of the answer to that. I apologize.
I
don't think it's significant. At some point during this period of time, they became aware that their plane was sitting there. They also became aware that Mr. Edquist wanted money. The fact that Mr. Edquist may or may not want money is irrelevant to U.S. Specialty Insurance. We're trying to determine whether or not there's been theft, whether or not there's been a conversion, and what we're supposed to do with that under the terms of the policy. Airplanes sitting out there larger than life, that's probably not a theft. Now, it could be a conversion, but there are all kinds of things that people can do to retrieve their aircraft.
Would you agree with me that under the insuring language in this policy, some thefts are covered, but some conversions are not?
I would not, because this policy, contrary to what Mr. Loper is telling me this morning, is a policy that covers damage to aircraft. If you look at our brief, there's a whole bunch of policy provisions, and it was too long, and I apologize for the length of it. But this policy ensures the first thing that's going to trigger coverage is damage. There's no damage.
The policy language is what you must do. Paragraph 7 addresses that. If your aircraft or an part of it is stolen and recovered before we have paid for it, we may return it to you along with payment for any physical damage to it. Why does that provision be in the policy that did not ensure some theft?
I don't have an answer.
If I may continue.
There's no conflict in the testimony, the facts. The facts are basically, as I'm reciting them to you, from Exhibits 2 and 3. They give you all the facts that I believe are relevant
December 2nd.
Is it tied down? Mark on December 2nd? Doesn't
appear to have been noted. No problems. Mark on December 2nd?
Not to any fact that's available in the record. At some point between December 11th and, or December 2nd and the 11th or 12th, when they finally decided they wanted to do something about it, there was a snowfall in front of it.
Isn't it reasonable for someone who crossed an aircraft through a repair person to assume that it's going to take a few days to get that aircraft repaired?
Well, yes, if you assume that the person that's going to repair the aircraft had the tools in the hangar to perform the repairs, there's a conflict in the testimony as to whether or not the purpose of the delivery of the aircraft was for repairs. Mr. Edquist testified that there were no tools available to perform any repair.
My question goes back to my other question regarding notice to DS Avionics.
Yes, ma'am.
If they were unaware that the plane had been made available or converted, depending on your definition, how are they to get the aircraft from December 2nd?
I haven't answered that, now that I thought about it. Their statement, their VS Avionics statement is that when the plane was made available on December the 2nd, they were unavailable to come get it. So they were aware on December the 2nd, that's their statement. That's a sworn proof. Well, that's in his statement of claim, which I can't remember if that's sworn or not. But the party who's trying to collect from us tells us he knew on December the 2nd in his claim summary. So I'm guessing then that we can rely on his statement that he knew at that time. This is a case about an insurance policy, as you pointed out, and it's nothing more, it's nothing less. We're bound by the terms of our policy and our investigation, which basically relied upon what they told us, plus we sent a guy up to take a look around, demonstrated that there was not coverage and there's no coverage to be afforded to them.
And your complaint is your declaratory judgment for your complaint. There was a kind of a broad allegation that there is no coverage under the coverage and condition coverage policy, that there was no particular policy provision or exclusion that was highlighted in the complaint. Do you think that is something that should drive our analysis?
No, I thought that the judge below the district court judge sufficiently addressed that on whether or not I had to be more specific in my complaint of the interest that I was raised and whether or not the defendant was placed on adequate notice as to what may be available for defenses.
Was there a denial letter issued under the
Two. And
did the denial letter specify the policy provision on which the carrier was
applying? I'm sorry.
I guess I'm trying to get a sense of whether the insured had an appreciation for the basis on which coverage.
Judge, we were in this case for a better part of 2 years. There were lots of motions, lots of things going on. I have no doubt that the defendant knew exactly where our claim was with regard to this.
Does it matter in your position that these events, and that they're not the same or not whether or not, and/or?
I don't think there's a distinction between the two. This whole string of events is interesting at a minimum, and no matter how you slice or dice it, it has nothing to do with the policy of insurance. So if you say it's not covered in the coverage provisions, or you say it's excluded because of the exclusionary provisions, these facts don't give rise to a claim under any insurance policy anywhere. They just don't.
You find that there is no dispute that you're adequate to burden the plumber. Assume that. You have an ER.
No. It just converts the plumber. We're covered. Conversion
for what? And as what? And as what? Client by what?
On the basis that he took possession of the plane under a claim of right, and under his claim, no matter how he makes that claim with regard to either the non-payment by Trey O'Daniel of past due rent or Mr. Edquist for storage fees, he clearly held the aircraft. And the holding of the aircraft, by the definitions that are available to us, appears to be a conversion. And once it becomes a conversion, he can convert the airplane. He doesn't have to. I mean, it's no different than a purchaser in a hot shop. You buy stolen property, you're still converting. That's.
I guess I'm having trouble squaring that argument, language, exclusion, which states anyone to whom you, the insured, relinquish possession.
I think that flows. There are some cases. I'm not promising that are not, but my recollection is there's some case law which addresses conversion by a secondary possessor, and that would cover the circumstance. I'm out of time. Anyone have anything else they want to ask me? Thank you very much. We would ask that the court affirm the decision of the lower court.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time to rebuttal?
No.
No, please, no time for rebuttal. That takes us.